You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. We're talking today to Vicki Harrison. She's executive director of Common Cause New Mexico. Common Cause is a nationwide organization based in Washington, D.C., with chapters in 35 states in the U.S., and it's been called the People's Lobby. It was founded after Watergate to address democracy issues like voting rights, disclosure of money in politics, ethics, and fair redistricting, things that we've been talking about a lot on this program, and things that are admittedly kind of wonky, especially in comparison to the many much more obviously pressing and visceral social issues like childhood poverty, education, and substance abuse. Topics like ethics and disclosure are kind of like the plumbing and wiring of your house or pouring the foundation. You want someone to do a good job, but you might not really care so much about the details, just kind of let them do it. But they're literally the infrastructure of our democracy, and they're what makes it work or not work. And in order to solve all the other problems like poverty and so on, you need to have that infrastructure strong and functional. So that's why we're talking about it, especially in this time when institutions in the United States are in many ways really under threat. So Vicki Harrison, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
One of the ways in which New Mexico has become actually a nationwide leader in democracy and in democratic institutions is our voting system. Talk about that, our election systems.
Mary Charlotte, we have great access to voting for eligible voters in New Mexico. We have no-fault absentee voting. So if you're going to be out of town on election day, you can get an absentee ballot and you don't have to give a specific reason. Some places make you detail out why you're not going to be there that day.
Really?
Really.
Like, I'm visiting
Great Aunt Elma over right. in Washington State, and I took the buggy and horse. 16 and 17 year olds can work in polling places. We have 3 weeks of early voting around the state. We brought in our voting convenience centers a few years ago, which do ballot on demand. So you don't have to go home to your precinct to vote. If you work across town, you can go during lunch anywhere they print you a ballot. Felons in New Mexico, if you're a former felon and once you have done your probation and parole, you can vote again. You're not crippled for the rest of your life because of something you've already done and paid for. The one place we're trying to fix, because we've got great things. I always make the joke that we're not Florida, we're not North Carolina, we're not restricting. In the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen 25 states try to restrict voting, try to decrease polling places, try to get rid of early voting, try to implement mandatory photo ID, something else we don't have. The one thing we're trying to improve in New Mexico is our voter registration deadline. Currently, you have to register 28 days before an election. And again, to bring out the horse and buggy, I mean, what is this? The Postal Service with the horse and buggy taking 28 days. So we've worked on a few different bills over the years. One, we call our 3-day bill that would extend registration up until the Saturday before elections. We've worked on an automatic voter registration bill. So, you know, when you go into MVD right now, it's federal law that they're supposed to ask you, would you like to register to vote or would you like to update? With humans, there's always errors. And I literally, at least 2 or 3 times a month, every month, get a call from somebody who's been in an MVD in New Mexico and was not asked that question. So making that question automatic, part of the screen when you roll into MVD. So we've got some great laws there. And, you know, what I always say is it's the appreciative inquiry type of looking at things. What are we doing really well here that we can replicate in other areas instead of always focusing on how lacking the other areas are?
One thing that we also have is paper ballots across the state.
Huge, huge. Thank you, Paul Stokes, down in Sandoval County. He and a bunch of advocates were able to pass that. And it's been a new thing that people are talking about with our elections. They're talking about risk auditing And they're talking about doing all of these things that we've been able to do in New Mexico for nearly a decade because we have those paper ballot backups.
Common Cause, as a nationwide organization and as an organization in New Mexico and all the other states, is very concerned with questions of ethics. And there's all kinds of ethical scandals. You can't even get up in the morning without hearing about another ethical scandal out of Washington, D.C. And I think it's really tricky because when people talk about the unethical behavior of the president or somebody in his administration or whatever, or in New Mexico, then other people who might support that person say, well, that's a partisan attack. You're a nonpartisan organization. Should ethics be divorced from partisanship? Are they two separate things?
They really are. It's difficult being nonpartisan in a very partisan country right now. But it's important to us at Common Cause because democracy issues and access to voting are nonpartisan. Our numbers, when we do our polling, we get the same amount of support from Republicans that we do from Democrats, that we do from independents or declined to state. And so, you know, it's one of the reasons why it took us over four decades to get an ethics commission passed through the legislature, which will be on the ballot this year for voters to decide, do we want an ethics commission? Do we want to join the other 42 states that have one? It's because of the fear around partisan attacks. That was the number one reason why it took us so long, because legislators year after year would say, oh, somebody's going to use this in an election. Somebody's going to file a false complaint. Well, they can already do that. And that's what we would say over and over. People can already do that. They can already alert the media. They can send a press release whenever they want. This is just something that should be divorced from partisanship, because what this does is when our elected officials are unethical, that makes people not participate. It's the reason why the mailers you get from PACs, 97% of them are negative in this country. They're not trying to trash the other guy. They're trying to get you to not vote. They're trying to turn you off from the process. And that's exactly what happens around ethics. And the public sees someone being unethical, and they want accountability. They want to know that just because you're an elected or appointed official, that you're not going to get a special deal that their cousin didn't get for doing the exact same thing.
You're bringing up a really important issue, which is the issue of cynicism. I did recently an interview with historian Nancy McLean on a book called Democracy in Chains, and it was about an economist who ended up being the go-to economist for Charles Koch and the Koch brothers. And one of the things he identified was that in the 50s and early 60s, there was a lot of trust between people and their government. And it was their goal to break that trust. I mean, they had an agenda to break the trust between government and the people, which doesn't seem to me like a very American thing to do, considering that we're grounded in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, and we have this sort of like ground into our souls from the day we first went to first grade, this idea of government of, by, and for the people. But when you have that mistrust for government, then when any scandal happens, any ethical scandal, people just shrug their shoulders and say, well, what can you expect? What you're talking about is, I think, part of the process of trying to actually have good government that people can put their trust in.
Absolutely. And that's what I tell people, Mary Charlotte. I don't care what your issue is, get involved. I would love to have two different student groups arguing and supporting two different sides of an issue at the roundhouse. I mean, it's about finding what matters to you. And not only do we have cynicism and voters pull back, then you have, do people want to run? Now, it's been very different this year because we've seen a huge influx of people wanting to run. And it's because people are frustrated with both parties. And so you're seeing a lot of young women, you're seeing a lot of people of color on both sides of the aisle that are running for office across the country. But that's not normal. That's not been our usual for the last two decades. The last two decades has been the political consultant types trying to find and convince someone to run for office in that district. It's hard when I talk to people, they're like, well, what's your final goal, Vicki? You know, what are you trying to do with all these policies? And I think, you know, my goal is that our government is by and for us and of us and represents us and looks like us and is from our community. One of the things that I talk about with a lot of our younger voters when they talk about primary elections, I had one of them tell me recently, Vicki, it doesn't make any sense. Every state has different rules. So by the end, you're comparing apples to oranges and the winners aren't really the winners. You've got a caucus over here. You've got a partial open primary over here. You've got a closed primary over here. All electoral votes go there. We split them up here. She said, it doesn't even make sense. You're taking data from different points and trying to come up with a conclusion. And she just called me out and said, my Econ 101 class would make mincemeat out of that.
What did you say to her?
I just stood there and said, you are absolutely right. And it's frustrating because we want people to be involved. And again, that's what all these policies for are, to get people to own our government again, to take it back. So it's not owned by millionaires, career politicians, and the corporations.
Let's talk for a moment about the idea of an ethics commission. What can an ethics commission really do? What is it that we're going to be voting on in the fall? How can it make a difference?
You know, we are super excited about this. Again, more than 40 years, year in and year out, pushing for this. And what this ethics commission will do, if it's passed by the voters in November 18, which we hope it is, we have about 90% support in the state for an ethics commission, hopefully that holds, is that we will have an independent body that can look at complaints against elected officials, appointed officials, departments, employees, a variety of people. And they have power to do subpoenas, to adjudicate cases. We think this is great. It will be open to the public. People will be able to go. And I tell people, you know, this is many steps. Again, with democracy, you don't do it and then you're done. We pass it now, we get great enabling legislation next year, and then we have to show up as citizens and hold this commission accountable and make sure they do it. Because we want to make sure that once the public realizes everyone is being held accountable to the same standards they're held accountable to by their bosses, then we start to rebuild the trust. It's just one piece. It's not going to fix everything, but it's certainly better than what we have now, which now, if there's an ethical complaint, if you can even figure out who to send it to, it goes to the legislature themselves. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. You know, you hear legislators say it worked with Phil Griego. Yeah, it worked with Phil Griego because there was a lot of pressure for it to work with Phil Griego. I bet there's untold complaints that have happened over the last 100 years that nobody knows about.
In order to understand what we're even talking about, let's talk about some concrete examples. New Mexico is known as a corrupt state. To what extent it really deserves that reputation compared to other states is a conversation.
Right. I mean, it's always New Orleans, New Mexico, and Chicago. Take your pick.
Right. And so what are some of the actual big scandals that we've had in the state of New Mexico that we can talk about in terms of ethics, in terms of this kind of scrutiny?
Well, the most recent one is what I just mentioned, was former Senator Phil Griego.
Tell us exactly what happened. What did he do and how did it play out?
So he was a real estate agent and the state had a building and he got another legislator to introduce a bill to sell that building to his client. He made $50,000 off of it. He did not disclose that on his financial forms. He took a walk off the Senate floor, so he did not vote on it. But he pushed it, and then he lied about it. And then there's other things he did with his campaign finance accounts that there's still pending charges, I think, around that from the attorney general, how he used his campaign finance funds. So he's now in jail.
That's one example. Another example is the former Secretary of State,
Diana Duran, who used her campaign contributions that hardworking New Mexicans around the state gave her to run for election, and instead she used that to gamble. And she also went to jail.
Those are two examples, and they both made front page headline news. There are many more that have not been disclosed in the same way. Who gets hurt by those two kinds of examples?
Well, everybody does. The public does. Because even though they went to jail, you know, these were cases that took a while. By the time cases get to the end, people want 100 years. So any sentence is never enough for the public because they're so frustrated. And they feel like if we're finally seeing this, how much is under the surface that we haven't seen? And so the public is a big loser, Mary Charlotte, when we have any ethical violations, because they get more and more disenfranchised. They feel like, again, what does my one vote do? You know who else gets hurt are other elected officials. You know, the media loves to rib me. Because I say all the time, and I absolutely mean it as someone who's been advocating for policy in this state for 25 years, our elected officials, the vast, vast majority of them are wonderful people. Even if they've never voted with me, ever, even if they voted against me, they are doing their best, whether they are a county commissioner or a state legislator, they are doing their best for our state. And they are huge losers when one of their colleagues is sketchy and unethical, because then they get painted with the same brush.
Now, the kind of losing that you're talking about, the kind of hurt and damage that you're talking about, is basically a kind of moral hurt. I mean, morale goes down and people are outraged. There's also
a financial.
Yeah, exactly. What you might call more financial hurt. And an example of that is an expose that came out last fall that had to do with the governor and the way that financial contracts were awarded.
Right. Awarding contracts to people that she preferred, who then gave her campaign contributions. And then the state as a whole did worse and got less of a return than if we had done what we had done previously.
So basically, she invested the state's money, the taxpayers'
right.
money.
And we got less of a return because she invested with her friend, right. is what this expose said. And, you know, there's more of a financial hit than just that, which, you know, when you're talking about state investments, a couple of percent can mean millions of dollars. There's also this idea around an ethics index, and a lot of universities and economists around the world look at how ethical is this country or how ethical is this state, because when companies hear of cronyism in New Mexico, when they hear of friends getting contracts, why would they move their businesses here?
Right.
I mean, we're talking all the time about moving businesses here. We move them here. We give them huge tax breaks. So how are they helping us? I don't know. I'm not an economist. Maybe that works out at some point. But think about all the ones that don't want to move here. Why would they? And it creeps into you. It even creeps into me. And I'm not necessarily cynical. I was driving in a very, very rural part of New Mexico a week ago. And in the middle of nowhere is a brand new highway, new asphalt and everything. And it feels terrible to me because my first thought is, whose brother-in-law has an asphalt company? And I don't normally feel that way, but it's starting to feel that way. And that financial hit that we take for not being seen as a place where everybody gets a level playing field, all businesses can come in and expect to get a contract. Well, they hear something like the Phil Griego thing where his friend wanted a building and they lied to the legislators. They told the legislators that we were losing money on it. We were not. And so why would anybody else want to come and buy a building? They're like, I don't even live there. I don't have the relationships going back 300 years. So ethics is so much bigger, and it's not a gotcha. Legislators should welcome an ethics commission. This is something that's going to give them more credibility and accountability.
Does having an ethics commission tend to, in other states where they have them, and there are a lot of other states where they do have them, do they tend to make people more careful and, in fact, make people more ethical because they know that they're more likely to be scrutinized?
That is something that we are researching. And another question we've also asked is, once you have an ethics commission, does that trust start to grow again? And of course, with the 42 ethics commissions out there, they're all over the place. There's good ones, there's bad ones, there's great ones that have been crippled by political reasons. You know, we have our own Congressional Office of Ethics that people tried to get rid of last year, which was why it was so important for us to do this as a constitutional amendment and have the voters vote on it and put it in the Constitution and then put all the nuts and bolts in statute, because that kind of stuff changes and you do need to be able to change that stuff. I mean, even some basic things we didn't even think of, you know, when you're talking about like two major parties. Well, in 10 years, are there going to be 10 major parties?
Right.
So I think it's important to have it in the Constitution and make sure that we can't get rid of it unless the voters want to.
So that's very interesting. And it's sort of the way the U.S. Constitution works. It's written in fairly general language and then Congress can make laws. So essentially you would have a kind of ethics commission that's written in general language in the New Mexico Constitution, and then bills, statutes would be written to constitute exactly what it is. And those could change over the years. For example, a lot of people didn't foresee the internet.
Oh, absolutely. Our campaign finance laws around the country are still trying to catch up.
Right.
A lot of people would have liked even more basic what's going to be on the ballot this year, but it's pretty long still. There's a lot of details in there, but it's been whittled down, and there will be statutes passed next year to figure that out. And then more will continue to be added. I mean, we always learn from things. It's like we're always trying to update the Campaign Reporting Act and our Lobbyist Regulation Act. These things change, and I get frustrated with people who want everything on day one, because again, this is democracy and it's never going to work that way. I can assure you every bill that Common Cause New Mexico sponsors, endorses, works on, we literally have amendments made in every committee and on every floor. It's democracy. Everybody wants to jump in. So I always tell people, don't come up with a perfect bill, because it's going to change at least six times before it gets to the governor.
One of the things that you were behind that did happen this year in the legislative session of 2018 was there was a memorial that was passed. Now, memorials are not laws, but they are sort of what, proto-laws?
They're proto-laws, and this particular memorial is asking Congress to do something. So back in 2012, New Mexico was the second state to formally ask Congress to overturn Citizens United. We said too much money, and we became the second state. This year, we pushed what is called the Fix It America Amendment, which would deal with two things, money and politics, which is more than just Citizens United. It's older cases on spending like Buckley v. Vallejo in the 70s. And, you know, as many a smart attorney has told me, things weren't exactly peachy the day before Citizens United.
Right.
So Fix It America would deal with all spending and contributions and also gerrymandering. And it's asking Congress to get serious and deal with these two issues. And so this year we passed a memorial through the Senate and through the House and became the first state in the country to do that and ask Congress to look at Fix It America and get it done.
Another thing that was kind of strange that happened this year was there was a bill to close a loophole about lobbying.
Yes.
It seemed like a good bill. It was passed, what, unanimously?
Both chambers.
Tell us what happened.
So a couple of years ago, we were working on a bill because our lobbyists just report how much they spend and they don't tell us who they're spending it on necessarily. So we had a bill that said anything over $100, you would have to list if it was a dinner or whatever. You would have to list out who was there and not just whatever, committee or something. And so the way it was drafted, and again, because everybody's got to put their fingers on these bills and changing an A to a Z can change everything, there was a mistake. And the way it ended up was all of a sudden that happened, but nothing under 100 was reported at all, not even cumulatively at this point.
So in other words, if you spent $99...
and 99 cents, you could just never report
taking
that.
Somebody out to lunch and badgering them about how you wanted such
and New
such
Mexico
a bill passed.
In depth looked at it last year and looked at the dramatic decrease in reporting that we had in just 1 year. Mm-hmm. And so this year, Senator Daniel Ivy Soto had a bill to fix this along with Representative Jim Smith, Democrat, Republican, and they got a message from the governor to do it. They worked with her on the language, make sure it was what they wanted because she had vetoed it last year after they tried to do a fix, and she vetoed it again, which makes absolutely no sense, Mary Charlotte. This is literally just fixing what has been our law all along. And of course, in her veto, she said that it didn't go far enough and that we need more information from lobbyists, which quite frankly makes me laugh. Because Senator Jeff Steinborn has been carrying bills for the last few years to require more information from lobbyists, and he can't even get out of a committee. So the idea that, you know, the governor suddenly supports this, it's the same thing she did to a really great bill back in 2013 to fix our public financing system. It would have updated our public financing system for PRC races and judicial races. We passed the bill 33-7 in the Senate and 66-0 in the House, and she vetoed it and said she wanted ground-up judicial reform. And I think it's a shame that our leaders are not taking advantage of good legislation in search of the perfect, because again, with democracy, you're never going to get that.
In the U.S. Congress, if something passes 99-1 or whatever, you know, in the Senate, and then there's a great huge majority in the House, and the president vetoes it, they can do an override. What about New Mexico?
Well, the problem is New Mexico is, A, we're out of session. So they could bring it back up next year.
I see.
Or if there was a special session called this year, I guess they could do that.
But everything is signed after the session is over, so they can't do the
So they can't do it.
Okay. What are you seeing in terms of, I mean, we were talking about cynicism a little while ago and disengagement from government. We're seeing a whole new wave of student activism. What does that look like to you?
It looks beautiful to me. It makes me cry. I'm not a crier, and I'm crying all the time watching students be active. You know, it's something that frustrates me so much with some folks my age, and, you know, they're, these kids, they're not paying attention. They're just on their phones. And I look at them and I say, think about it. If you're a young person, have you ever even seen a functional Congress? Have you ever seen people work together? Have you ever seen the John McCain's and the Russ Feingold's of the 90s reach across the aisle and pass bipartisan campaign reporting? I mean, you haven't seen that. You've seen partisan attacks. You've seen the event of super PACs. And so students are tired of us. They are ready to do it on their own. And I think this is just like the Me Too movement, just like the Black Lives Matter movement. These are places where you see a lot of people who have traditionally done policy, traditionally done organizing. This is a time for us to be allies and let these groups lead themselves. And for us to be allies and learn something. I can't even tell you how much I love to see people passionate about something. Again, it doesn't even matter if I agree with their issue. I just want someone to be caring about an issue that affects them, their family, their community, their churches. This is what is going to save our country. And I can't be any more alarmist. Because it's true. If people are disengaged and not voting, think about it. When you're talking about the 50s and the 60s and this economist and the Koch brothers, back then, people did trust government. Then you got into the 70s and you had Watergate and some other things.
And the Vietnam War.
And the Vietnam War, nuclear weapons. You had a lot going on. EPA and, you know, clean air. And people started not trusting Congress, but they trusted their congressperson. It was this whole idea, they're all sketchy, but mine's part good. Now, people aren't even voting for theirs, so there's no skin in the game, and they can just lump them all into one. And people are like, well, what do we do? Well, you give them better choices. The thought that we have however many hundreds of millions of people in this country, yet we're all supposed to think one of two ways, is ridiculous with two parties.
Well, we've had two parties for a long time, and that trust was there. When you say they thought maybe the other ones were sketchy, but they had their congressperson, now they're not voting for theirs, what do you mean? I mean, we're still voting for whether it be Ben Ray Lujan or Steve Pierce or whoever.
But people aren't. I mean, when you look
you mean
at
voter
the turnout
is right. So low.
So they're not turning out to vote because they're not seeing a difference between these two. And yes, because the parties 50 years ago encompassed much more of America than they do now. And when I say parties, you think about the because the way the public sees the parties is through advertisements and mailers and social media ads. They're not going to party meetings necessarily. So they're seeing all of the advertising. And the advertising is negative. And the advertising is focused on the fringe 5% on either party. So 90% of us in the middle are not even being talked to.
When there are big ethics scandals in New Mexico or any place else, what is the effect of them on the public? I mean, there's kind of like two things going on at once, and help us sort it out. On the one hand, you've got a somewhat cynical public that when something happens, they say, oh, I don't care. On the other hand, there is quote-unquote public outcry that makes a difference.
It absolutely does. And it's because the public is just busy living their lives. And so when people show up, it makes a difference. Because legislators aren't used to people showing up.
How do they show up?
In New Mexico, it's easy. We have such short legislative sessions. They're either 1 or 2 months a year. So that means either 10 or 11 months, your legislator is in your town. We have so much access that many other states do not have. So affecting policy in New Mexico is actually really easy to get to your legislators and talk to them. And something I tell people and they hate to hear because I have some people who say, you know, both my legislators are totally awesome on this. My state senator and my state rep, they're really great. Who else can I work on? Nobody.
Right.
Okay. What you do is you talk to the people on the issue you care about, find out what legislators are against you, and start organizing there. Find people who live there. Because that's who people want to hear from, is their own constituents. That's where that ethics piece comes in, is having that trust and wanting to go vote and seeing that there's a difference. That you're not choosing between, and we hear it all the time, it's the lesser of two evils, which is going to be the worst for us. And that's not the way it should be. I talked to a group from a bunch of different overseas countries last week, and they were like, wow, we love to vote. We have cities and counties and countries and states across the world where there's compulsory voting. Where you have to vote. I mean, I was talking to this woman who was a mayor in a city in South America, and she said, you can't get married, you can't drive, you can't have a job unless you vote.
Really?
Fascinating information. You know, we take it for granted. So when people show up, it makes such a difference. I know for myself, 20-something years ago when I was a student at UNM, Jeff Bingaman came to talk to a big group. And I raised my hand and asked a question. And I said, why should I ever write you a letter? This is pre-internet. Or maybe two people had internet at that point. And I said, so why should I even write you a letter? Are you going to even listen to me? And he said, you know, yes. He said, because every letter I get, I multiply that by 10,000. He said, because I know every time I hear from someone that 10,000 other people feel that same way, but didn't take the time to write.
Do you think that's still true now
with internet?
I absolutely
do. Not with the form emails, people. Don't be doing that. These legislators aren't stupid. I can remember sitting in a legislator's office a couple years ago, and there was, I'll go ahead and say it was a big gun bill, and the NRA was sending out, and her email, Mary Charlotte, was just flying from all over the country with the same exact email. Within our 3-minute conversation, she got 400 emails. So I tell people, meet with your legislator. Send them an email. Meet them for coffee. They're home 10 or 11 months out of the year. The best time to start lobbying your legislator and advocating as a citizen advocate is right now.
Now, you're talking about your state legislator.
Yes. And you can, and the same thing with, I mean, again, our congressional delegation is much more accessible than many. First of all, we only have 3 in Congress. So they're here a lot. They have offices all over the state. Talk to their people. Find out who else is interested in what you're interested in. Show up. I can't tell you how much it means and makes a difference. When somebody sends an email, sends a letter, does a phone call, it makes a difference.
Vicki Harrison, what are your hopes for New Mexico in the coming years? I mean, you've been working at this for some time with Common Cause New Mexico. What would you like to see enacted? What kind of changes would you like to see in this state?
We have a nice list of things we would love to see happen. We would like to see more disclosure around lobbyist activities. We'd like to know how much lobbyists are paid. We'd like to know what they're working on. We would like to see decline to state voters, those voters in our state who are not part of any party, be able to vote in primaries. We would like to see automatic voter registration at MVDs so we didn't have to deal with the human factor. We would eventually like to see public financing expanded to legislative races, statewide races, more judicial races. We would like to see a really strong ethics commission with public input, the public showing up. We would love an independent redistricting commission. There's a lot of court cases going on around the country. New Mexico is not nearly as gerrymandered as other states, but this is something that we would like to see. We would like to see the fantastic rules and regulations that our Secretary of State, Maggie Toulouse Oliver, did last year. We would like to see those replicated in statute. There's a lot of good stuff coming up, and there's a lot of great things to work on in New Mexico. We work both at the state level and at the city level. I'm working this month in Sandoval County on an ethics commission. We're working this year to update a successful public financing program in Albuquerque. We'll hopefully be doing that in Santa Fe as well, now that we have a new mayor, some new counselors, revive that. So there's always a lot going on.
And how do you stay uncynical yourself?
My animals. I've got the most fantastic dog and 4 cats, Mary Charlotte. That's literally what keeps me. I will tell you, I have been lobbying in Santa Fe for 24 years for many different issues. And I have, during the session, I have never spent the night in Santa Fe. Even if I had a hearing go till 2 a.m. and had to be back at 8 a.m., I drove that hour back to Rio Rancho to hang out with my animals and feel real again. Living in New Mexico makes working on politics easy because I can decompress and not be cynical. And a more serious answer is because really the majority of the people I work with, whether they're advocates, legislators, or staff, are really great people trying to do the right thing. And so I feel it's incumbent on all of us to rise to the challenge and really protect and make sure our democracy is stronger for all these students who are out there protesting right now.
Vicki Harrison is Executive Director of Common Cause New Mexico. They're on the web. Can people join the New Mexico chapter specifically, or do they have to join the national organization?
No, they can join us specifically. They can just go to nm.commoncause.org, and right at the top, you just put in your name and your zip code. We just ask for your zip code so we don't send you, if you live in Roswell, you don't care about what's going on in Farmington necessarily. So that's all you have to do, email address and zip code, and you can become a supporter and we'll stay in touch.
Vicki Harrison, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
You've been listening to The Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer repair and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of The Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.